Welcome to BookSpeak on Indiana Public Radio, a chance for members of our audience to review a book on the air.
My name is Jennifer Blackmer. I'm from Muncie. Ah, summer, a time to relax, reflect, regroup, and, in my case, read speculative fiction about futuristic dystopias. My latest is Margaret Atwood's The Year of the Flood, a new companion to her 2003 novel Oryx and Crake. In both novels, Atwood examines current social trends, taking them just a few steps further to draw forward conclusions that are provocative and, in many cases, downright spooky. Like The Handmaid's Tale, Atwood's best-known work, Oryx and Crake begins after an apocalypse, in this case a global plague orchestrated by Crake, a mysterious genetic engineer. Through the flashbacks of Snowman, one of the few humans to survive, we learn of the events leading to this plague. We encounter a world overrun by splice creatures, phosphorescent rabbits and pigs genetically modified to grow transplantable human organs. Atwood's future society also magnifies a growing class divide. The wealthy live in gated communities. Employees of the rich corporations spend their bonuses living in highly secure compounds. The rest inhabit the plebe lands, violent, lawless areas with little security, as the police force has also long since been privatized. Atwood's brand new companion novel, The Year of the Flood, takes us back to this world through the eyes of two very different characters, this time from the plebe lands. Wren, a young woman who endures life as an exotic performer, and Toby, an older woman who finds security and solace in a fringe ecological religious community called the God's Gardeners. At the end of The Year of the Flood, the two novels merge seamlessly as Snowman meets Wren and Toby, who are running for their lives from roving marauders. In The Year of the Flood, Toby casually refers to the Dead Zone, an area in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico that is devoid of life. Reading this passage amid the news of the current oil spill literally sent shivers down my spine. While speculative fiction may not be everyone's way to spend a lazy summer, in these works, Margaret Atwood brilliantly identifies the trends of our own society and takes them to their most logical, albeit chilling, extremes. I'm Jennifer Blackmer for BookSpeak.
I'm John McKillop for BookSpeak. The book is Coolidge, An American Enigma by Robert Sobel. This work presents an overall comprehensive and unbiased perspective on the education and career of our 30th president, Calvin Coolidge. It was tempting at times during the preparation of this analysis to begin a review of Coolidge the man, the president, the father, and or the husband, rather than the book itself. This speaks to the quality of the writing and flow of the book, I think, much the same way that a moviegoer may grow to strongly like or dislike a specific character in a feature film based on the quality of the acting. This book devotes the early chapters to Coolidge's education in the 1880s and 1890s, where he confined himself to Vermont and Massachusetts education before eventually becoming a lawyer. The chapters are each more or less modules comprising major aspects of Coolidge's academic and career growth: law and politics, to the statewide scene, Governor Coolidge, and so on. The author highlights Coolidge's rise to the national scene, more accurately described really as the sudden appearance to an America who had never before heard of Calvin Coolidge, following his actions and hardline stance in settling the Boston police strike in 1919. In fact, settling strikes during the 19-teens became one of Coolidge's apparent strengths thereafter. The author reiterates the notion that as president, Coolidge was an interesting subject, although not greatly so, more misunderstood than anything, it would seem. Through copious and accurately referenced historical events and individuals, the book follows a natural flow of world events and national crises that dotted the 1920s during the Coolidge presidential years, European nations' repayment of their debts to the United States from World War I, navigating tense relations with Mexico, keeping the peace in a politically unstable Nicaragua, as well as the domestic affairs that included moving beyond the Teapot Dome scandals left over from the Harding administration. Certain sections of the book make it clear that the author's background in economics may have been a driving force in writing this book. For a large section of one chapter, for example, the author spends a superfluous amount of time delving into a comparative financial tutorial, digressing from the Coolidge biographical angle into a comparative analysis of the 1929 stock market forecast compared to that of the mid-1990s under President Clinton. The term bull market appears no less than 30 times in the course of this portion of the chapter, leaving one wondering whether or not a return to the events of Coolidge's retirement would eventually reward the persistent reader or not. This book is a good read for those interested in American history during the early years of the last century and how similar our culture really is to this time of 90 years ago. I'm John McKillop from the Biology Department at Ball State for BookSpeak. Thank you.
Support for BookSpeak comes from Toyota and Scion of Muncie and Ivy Tech Community College.